Welcome to the Fat Fuel Family Podcast, where every week Danny and Maura Vega discuss topics that help families live a healthy and active lifestyle with their little ones, including nutrition and training, peaceful parenting, education, and mindset. To stay up to date, make sure to hit subscribe on this podcast and check out the blog at www.fatfuel.family. You can also find them on Facebook and Instagram at dannyvega.ms, at fatfueledmom, and at fatfueledkids, and Fat Fuel Family on YouTube. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Fat Fuel Family Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Vega, and I'm joined by Maura Vega. How are you, my love?
I'm doing great.
We're super excited because we are going to be publishing a lot of podcasts in the next couple of months because we really want to educate people. So just a quick introduction. This week is we're kicking off a series that we hope will educate our listeners on the benefits of medical cannabis for all these different conditions versus the standard of care. And we've partnered up with a great company called Sertera Wellness. And you all may have already seen us share about this on social media. We've seen the benefits of cannabis in a lot of people we know who have suffered from a range of issues, including PTSD, anxiety, postpartum depression, traumatic brain injury. I mean, the list can go on forever. So we hope to demystify this for everybody and hopefully shed a lot more light on a very misunderstood subject. And this week, we kick it off with Dr. Nicholas Bataro. He's an ophthalmologist whose passion for medicine and helping people began at a very early age and whose drive to help his patients in every aspect of their lives brought him to medical cannabis. He saw an incredible need for medical marijuana in his own family as his mother suffered from pancreatic cancer. During her last few months, she was in constant pain and her doctors pushed an incredible amount of narcotics at her without giving any consideration to alternative relief. And now he finds great fulfillment in giving his patients the greatest quality of life possible, regardless of their ailments, without the poisons of many pharmaceuticals. So welcome to the show, Dr. Nicholas Bataro. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for having me on today. And I'm looking forward to the podcast today and just able to talk about it. It's something, as you said, I've grown to develop such a massive passion for this field of medicine and how much it's helping people. So I cannot thank you enough for having me on today.
We're grateful as well.
Yeah, we're so grateful that you came on the show and we're so excited to educate our listeners on this topic. So we always lead off with the question, what is the most critical problem you are currently trying to solve?
It's a great question. It's a complicated question
because
there are so many different problems in this field right now. But I think the most overwhelming issue that we all need to tackle is understanding this medicine, really understanding what it is, understanding where we've been, where we are, and where we're trying to go with this medicine. But the overshadowing stigma that is still attached to this medicine is really out of not being informed or properly educated on cannabis as a medicine, how it can be used as a medicine, and really to get rid of that stigma. So that's one of the biggest challenges, just as I see, not only just in the state of Florida, but really throughout the country and the world. In addition to that, there's little things that we try and tackle every day, which is, what are the best medications for the best diagnoses and what's going to help specific patients, research and development to, come out with better and more efficient and types of cannabis products for our patients. So there's always something. That's why it's an exciting field, because there's always something to really a challenge to tackle. Overwhelmingly, we're successful, and we take on each challenge with cannabis, and really are, it's just an amazing plant and an amazing medicine that it kind of figures out the obstacles for us in many ways.
Well, we're grateful for everything we're seeing. Like, we're seeing like slow incremental steps. And look, on any day, like, it's the most important thing is giving patients access to treatment. I mean, there are several treatments that don't even have close to the amount of, evidence that cannabis has. And sometimes those work as well, and, the bottom line is, patients should have access to things that can help them. And, it's a, to me, it seems like a very natural right to have But can you tell us a little bit about your passion and how it led you to incorporate medical cannabis into your practice? You know, we know that your experience with your mother, that may have shaped your views. And did you come from a different point of view, or were you always kind of curious to see, you know, when you saw like this being used as something, you know, as a viable treatment?
So it's an interesting journey. It's one that was definitely unexpected in my life. But you know, I kind of grew up just like everybody else, where it was a part of kind of growing up. You know, you knew some people doing it and some people didn't. And, as the laws changed out West, you know, kind of some more interest sparked in it, but I never really looked at it as a medical, product or as a medicine, while I was looking into becoming a physician. So I never saw the two of them coming together in any way. And until I was met with the personal need for it in my own family, as you talked about before. You know, my mom was, when I was in my third year medical school, my mom was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which is arguably the worst type of cancer to get. There's really limited treatments, no real cure, and all stuff I knew immediately about my mom, but I didn't know what the next 8 months would look like or entail. So fast forward and to the point where we're really into palliative care now with my mom, and she was just given an excessive amount of narcotics to treat her pain. But at the same time, as you know, we all know, yes, they treat the pain well, but at the same time, they take away any quality of life that could potentially still be there. And at the time, you know, I had some decent connections in the medical field already. So, you know, we got my mom into the best of the best in the world. She was at a few institutions in New York and then also in Boston, and at the best pancreatic specialists in the world. And at the time, both states were actually medical states. They had medical marijuana. And so I thought it was a reasonable question to bring up to these experts about any utility, not necessarily as a treatment or a curative, but really I was looking for it as just a symptomatic relief, to be able to give this medicine to her instead of the narcotics, to be able to still treat the pain, but give her a better quality of life. And, you know, I used to joke with my mom at the time. I said, Mom, you know, let me just, you know, I can just go get some from my buddies and you can see how it works. And, you know, obviously I shouldn't have, you know, promoted that. But my mom, the amazing and ethical woman that she was, said, you know what, Nick, unless, you know, we can do it the right way, I just, you know, I don't want to do it. And so we approached our doctors about it and they were just completely closed off. Wow. Wanted nothing to do with it. Didn't even want to talk about it. And basically just belittled even the question itself. And, it was very frustrating. And that this was multiple doctors too, in a state where it was medically allowed. And so, you know, I kind of made the promise to myself, and it wasn't anything I focused on too much at the time, but I said to myself, you know, if the opportunity ever comes up for me in my career where I can utilize this and really help patients and in ways that my family did not feel that help or that compassion by using medical cannabis, that I would take that opportunity. So fast forward a couple years, and I'm in my ophthalmology, and I, you know, so that's eye surgery, and a practice in here in Newport Richey, Florida, and next thing I know, medical marijuana passes here in the late 2016. You know, at the time, I still wasn't really thinking strongly about it, but I needed to kind of make some money on the side. So to be honest with you, I looked into it a little more. But it was in about 1 week of seeing patients that I knew my life was definitely going to change. My career was going to change. Everything about what I knew was going to change in some way. Because that first week when I started to see patients and I started to see results of patients that had been already on it for a few months, And then I started to see my own patients back for their follow-up appointments, that I really saw how much this medicine is helping people and how much, you know, what I thought I knew about it was so trivial to how much there actually is to know and how much it can help and how much it's been doing. And now, fast forward another 2 years, almost 3 years, and I've seen over 6,000 patients here in Florida.
Wow.
So one of the most in Florida. So that experience, that and the anecdotal data that I've collected from that, everything that I thought it could be in that first week, it's just proven itself over and over again to be this really incredible treatment for such a vast variety of diseases and ailments. And it's really changed my future to the point now where, you know, yes, if I integrated it into my current practice, so I keep my ophthalmology practice separate from my medical marijuana practice, but there is some overlap with some patients with glaucoma as one of the qualifying conditions. But for the most part, they're separate practices, and I'm extremely passionate about both. I've always wanted to be an eye surgeon since I was a little kid, but now it's really getting to the point where I'm really having to make the decision here where, you know, which kind of direction do I want to go if I can't keep doing both, just because of how powerful the medical cannabis has been for my patients. I don't think I could ever walk away from it at this point. I think it will always be a part of my practice. What capacity moving forward, you know, whether it's more or less, hopefully it's more, because I really do believe this medicine will change the face of medicine as we know it, moving forward. So That's kind of been my journey thus far. And it's been quite an incredible, journey so far, seeing so many different patients. You know, it's funny, I could talk on this for hours, but it's funny that going through medical school and going through training, there was a few things I told myself I, you know, just wasn't for me, that I would never do. I never wanted to work in the hospital because general medicine just wasn't for me. I didn't really want to do pediatrics because I just am too sensitive. I have a tough outer skin, but as I've been told, I have kind of a pink, sparkly heart. So kids always kind of get to me. So I said, you know what? I just can't deal with sick kids. And you know, next thing I know, you know, my youngest cannabis patient is 3 years old and my oldest is 97. The range of diagnoses are more than I would ever experience doing internal medicine in the hospital. So my plan, you know, for saying that I always kind of liked was, you know, a way to make God laugh is to tell him your plans. And so that's kind of been my whole thing is like, you know, whatever my plans were, they definitely changed, and cannabis has been a huge instrument in really expanding my scope of practice.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That is so exciting. And especially because, like you said, I mean, I was speaking about this yesterday with friends about how a really well-lived life is a life where you can always continue to learn. And we're a bit biased on this side because, you know, I feel like there's a ton of ophthalmologists and there aren't a ton of doctors who are just seeing thousands of patients for medical marijuana. And it's just awesome to see how, you know, you can treat so many different things. You can learn about so many different things. And, you know, one thing that I have a question on is, I just thought of this was, you know, on this side, we have, you know, a podcast where we talk about nutrition and we talk about nutritional therapies, which are just as, you know, much of a stigma for treating things as is something like medical cannabis. And so what we see that's been really helpful is doctors publishing, you know, case studies, because the literature that's the supportive literature is just so there's none there on a lot of nutritional therapies. So is there a similar, I would assume not because it's just so many people using it, but is there a similar lack of dearth when it comes to studies on cannabis? And if so, have you done any case studies that you've published, you know, looking at the different conditions?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, it's one of the more frustrating things to hear when people's arguments are that there are no studies on it, because it just simply reflects the kind of the overview and the perspective of the majority of people is that it's simply just not educated on the topic or on the medicine. Yep. Because if you look up any of this, there are tens of thousands of studies that have been conducted over the last 50 years all over the world that give us really incredible information. And in fact, you mentioned it earlier too, but we actually have more studies and more information on cannabis and whether it's biochemistry or pharmacokinetics or just the different ways that the medicine works, then a majority of our pharmaceutical medications.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
There's always a pivotal study and then maybe a follow-up safety
maybe
study.
Maybe a follow-up study.
And that's it.
And that's it. Yeah. Exactly. And so it really is incredible. And then the second most frustrating question I get too, or not question, but comment is, well, we need double blinded studies. And so it's again a further misunderstanding of the medicine. How are you going to give a medicine that is potentially psychoactive, you know, meaning altering your mentation or your thought process? How are you going to give a medication and then give a placebo or a control to another person and have them be blinded to which medication they're getting? You can't like smoke something and get high and be like, well, that might not have been the cannabis. No, you can't have that double blinded study with a medicine like this. Very similar to how they can't have double blinded study with strong narcotics or things like that. So that's another thing. It's just kind of the misunderstanding of these, of what's needed in the medical community and what we currently have in the medical community for these studies. They're two very different things. What we need is research and development on this plant to further elucidate the beneficial outcomes of some of the less known medicines that we get from the cannabis plant. You know, when we talk about cannabis and medical marijuana, most people automatically think of THC and CBD. Yeah. But those are only two of over 130 different cannabinoids in the marijuana plant, all with a therapeutic effect. And there's over 400 active ingredients in the cannabis plant that all could potentially have medical benefits. So we know a lot about maybe four or five of them. So now there's more further research being done on some of the less prominent cannabinoids in the plant and showing some really great results of how they can be isolated and utilized for very specific treatments and all without getting any psychoactive or high symptom. So there's really great utility here too, where we can see, well, okay, medical cannabis isn't about getting high. It's much more about getting treated and getting help and getting a better quality of life. Sometimes that means we utilize THC, but not all the time. And it's one of the big things I hope, if there's one point to get across in this podcast, is that medical cannabis does not mean that you have to be walking around high all day to be feeling better.
Right.
Yeah,
there are many different forms, and I think we'll talk about it later, different ways to take it, different forms to take. So the research is there. More research needs to be done. And then to answer your other question about case studies, quite simply, yes, I have many, many case studies, and it almost became too overwhelming to keep up with them because there's so many incredible outcomes. Some of the biggest ones that I'll mention two really outstanding studies that we've looked at is number one is for the case of peripheral neuropathy. Peripheral neuropathy is numbness and tingling, usually in the extremities, the hands and the feet. most often caused by diabetes, so an advanced diabetes, but also it's really related to any type of nerve injury. It can happen with neck or back injuries, any type of injuries like that. So peripheral neuropathy, with just the use of a high-quality marijuana-based CBD from a dispensary, we've shown that with continued long-term use of CBD, it is just short of curative of most peripheral neuropathy patients I've seen. And so wow. I have seen patients come in and say, you know, doc, I haven't felt my feet in 5 years. I haven't been able to walk. I've been on crutches or in a wheelchair. And at their follow-up appointment 6 months later, I see them walking in. And they're not having pain. They're not having tingling or burning sensation from the neuropathy anymore. And they're doing much better. And the important thing, too, with these case studies, too, or just with any of the results I'll talk about, is it has to be done with proper use. And so that's something, yes. too, that maybe we'll talk about later. But really having that physician's guidance, an educated physician in this field that knows how to use this to have the best outcomes is so, so, so important. I have a lot of patients that try CBD once or twice and they say it doesn't work. And so they give up on it without really knowing that it's a long-term medication, that it may actually take a month or two to actually start getting the long-term benefits of it, which makes it a totally different medicine than THC is. So really unique there. The second case study that I just absolutely love, and it's the most kind of shocking from my colleagues in medicine, where they simply just don't believe me at first, but it's the case of pulmonary disease. Now, pulmonary disease, specifically COPD, emphysema, chronic bronchitis, asthma. I have had patients, and I even was skeptical to begin with, when I would have patients that used to be on oxygen, and I say used to be on oxygen because of their pulmonary disease, now not needing their oxygen either as much or at all after they get on a consistent program with medical cannabis. And so, you know, after maybe a dozen patients of seeing this and thinking it was maybe placebo or thinking it was kind of not possible, because in med school, we're taught there's no reversing COPD or emphysema. It's just, that's it.
My grandmother has this.
I'm making faces as you're saying this because this is blowing my mind. I've never heard of this.
I've never heard that.
And it's incredible. Making faces at Danny because his grandmother is, you know, suffering with this right currently. Yep. And this is insane.
Yeah. And that just shines light on the point that, and it's something that I've seen without a doubt, is that this, it is such a versatile medicine. That really, I'm at the point of saying anybody over the age of 45 or 50 should be utilizing it in some way for their general health, because it's such an amazing medicine, not only as a treatment or therapeutic, but also as a preventative. But going back to pulmonary disease, you know, I teamed up with a buddy of mine who's a pulmonologist in the Tampa Bay area, and I called him. I said, "Hey, doc, I don't believe what I'm seeing. Would you mind kind of validating some of this for me?" And so he said, yeah. And he started seeing some of my patients. And lo and behold, there's a specific test called pulmonary function test. And their pulmonary function tests were improving with time. And get this, with inhaled CBD. So this is by utilizing a vaporized form of the medicine of CBD. And it has been shown to be reducing the inflammation and increasing the efficiency of healthy lung tissue, and therefore allowing some patients to not only breathe better, but actually get off of the oxygen that they may have been on for, you know, some patients just at night, some patients 24/7. So just that alone, if you look at that, taking that away, the quality of life, you know, no more shortness of breath going up a short flight of stairs, no more, you know, now you're able to hang out and play with your grandchildren without running out of breath. really just changing lives in very simple ways, but in very impacting and in really, really massive ways. So those are two.
Wow.
Real, I mean, the list goes on and on for case studies. I mean, I have an ophthalmology. There are some genetic diseases that have been shown to be or previously incurable and progressive, where I've had a couple patients now actually have start with some improved vision and recovery of these genetic disorders. We are just scratching the surface. And again, most of the stuff I see is anecdotal. It's just from seeing patients in front of me. Do I have the research of all of it? No, not yet, but it will be coming. After seeing 6,000 patients, I don't know how much research I need to see at this point to know yeah, that exactly. this medicine works. I don't need a paper from a lab somewhere to tell me that this works. I have thousands of patients that I know it's working in. So it's pretty awesome.
Wow.
That is so awesome. And that is so exciting because we're here thinking, like pain, nerve stuff, but man, pulmonary stuff. I mean, this is next level. So, but that's like perfect because that, and I know you wanted to, you mentioned proper use and that was one of our questions. So can you explain why it's so important to, you know, to prescribe people the right strains and ratios and, you know, kind of what goes into the dosing as far as, you know, the condition goes as well?
Absolutely. So the one thing, I speak all over Florida and the country and educating other physicians and patients and companies. But the one thing my number one point always, to no matter who I'm talking to, mostly physicians though, is that our number one thing we have to know is how little we do know about, especially about this plant. So then, okay, that's fine. We understand that. But also then we really have to grab onto the things that we do know. So in understanding that about the plant itself, and then we can look at a patient and their pathology and their and what's going on with their disease, you can really match up. The first thing here is utility of specific cannabinoids. So whether it's THC or CBD or some of the other lesser known ones. So for instance, if I have a patient come in with a diagnosis that's mostly an inflammatory condition, inflammation drives the majority of our pathology or our diseases. And so CBD, CBD has been shown to be over 100 times the strength of Advil and twice the strength of prednisone for its anti-inflammatory effects. So just in the immune system alone, the immune regulation there, CBD is always a product that I will utilize with my patients. So we'll start with that. CBD doesn't have to be strain specific. CBD as a medicine is CBD. From a marijuana plant, this is a big question that comes up all the time because CBD can also come from hemp. So a lot of people say, well, what's the difference? I can get hemp-based CBD over the counter. Well, there's some big differences. First and foremost is over-the-counter products are unregulated and untested. And there was a study that came out about 6 months ago that showed that 73%, I think it was 73 or 74%, of over 400 different companies' products in the United States, CBD over-the-counter, 73% were mislabeled and most had little to no CBD in them at all.
Wow.
So first off, whatever you're buying over the counter, it's not what you think you're getting. The second part, though, speaking more medically, is that a hemp plant is a great plant that does, it's used for many different things, but it's been grown to utilize its more industrial properties. So it's a fibrous plant. It doesn't produce much medicine. And if you remember, I said there's over 130 different cannabinoids in the marijuana plant. Well, when you look at a hemp plant, because of the way it's been grown over the years, we really limited it to maybe only about 15 to 20 cannabinoids. And then those other 400 active ingredients really get minimized down to maybe less than 80. And so when we're pulling CBD from a plant, you have to realize we're not just pulling CBD by itself. We're pulling some of these other medicines with it. And so when our starting material, like a hemp plant, is much less, then you can imagine our end product is going to be much less. there's something in the with the medicine that was coined over in Israel called the entourage effect. A lot of people believe the entourage.
Heard of
it, yeah. So a lot of people believe the entourage effect means simply a ratio of CBD to THC. But it's another misunderstanding, because the entourage effect is the true meaning behind it is the entourage of all of the cannabinoids, not just two, but all of them. They all work together. They all help each other to have a more therapeutic effect. So going back to hemp-based CBD, when you're pulling CBD from a hemp plant, you're only getting a few other cannabinoids, a few other terpenes or flavonoids, all these other medicines in the plant. Your end product is still much less of a product, a much inferior product medicine than what you would get from a marijuana plant. So CBD, the first thing I tell my patients is CBD has to be from a marijuana plant for you really to get the full amount of potential from this medicine. So that's across the board. It doesn't matter who my patient is, how old they are, you know, what disease they have. That's across the board. CBD, to utilize that is just going to help everybody. CBD is such a unique medicine as well because it works differently in every organ system. So the way it works on the immune system is totally different than the way that it works in your bones to increase your bone density. Totally different than the way that it works in the brain to decrease anxiety or depression, or to stabilize disorders like bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, all these mental health illnesses that CBD really, truly helps. So it works differently everywhere, which really makes it a unique medicine. So number one is definitely how to use CBD and then use it appropriately. One of the biggest things here as well is efficiency. So it's what one thing I really teach on is CBD is actually best used in an inhaled form. So I get a lot of people that don't like that. They want nothing to do with smoking. So it's another hurdle to get over to say, okay, well, this isn't smoking. It's more like a portable or electronic nebulizer or a inhaler for an asthmatic. So if you think of it that way, that you're using this delivery method for the medicine, just like an albuterol inhaler would be. People seem to come around a little bit easier to it, but it's up to 8 times more effective when it's inhaled as opposed to when it's used in a drop or a pill form. And so that is really important for people to understand too. You know, I get a lot of patients that come in and say, I've been using CBD drops for a couple months and I get no benefit. Well, no, you wouldn't, because you're not using it enough. You're not using, if you're going to use it orally, you have to use higher dosing and more frequent dosing than if you were to inhale it. You could use much lesser of a dose and not as frequent. So really understanding what's called the pharmacokinetics or how this medicine works in the body is so important for our physicians to understand, but then also to direct our patients on how to use it. So I have Nick's 3 rules for CBD. I tell all my patients, number one, medical marijuana only, based CBD. Number two is inhaled if possible. And number three is frequency of use. So it does have to be used more of a long-term product if it's going to be used to its fullest potential. I explain it like this. You can have weak bones and your doctor tells you you need to take a calcium and vitamin D supplement. Well, you can't just take calcium for a week and expect to have stronger bones. It takes time to heal. And so CBD helps our bodies to heal. And so it's going to take some time. And then we flip over to THC. Well, what is THC? THC is much more of a symptomatic reliever. It's doing much less on the healing part, but it's doing much more on the feeling better part now. Better now. And so they're two totally different medicines. With THC, one of the biggest problems I see and one of the biggest problems with it ever becoming recreational is that people overuse it. Now, this isn't a problem because it's harmful, because you could use 100 times the appropriate dose and you still will be safe. It still will not be physically harmful. It might be uncomfortable, but it will never hurt you. Such an amazing safety profile on this medicine. Tylenol is about 10 times more dangerous than cannabis.
Oh, yeah.
You can buy a bottle of Tylenol at any CVS or Walgreens, and you can be dead within 24 hours. There's no amount of cannabis that could ever do that. And so the safety, you have to, that's always a first and foremost. But typically, you know, your starting dose for a cannabis naive patient is only about 3 to 5 milligrams. And that's what I start my patients off of. It's really important to know this, especially when you have some dispensaries out there that are selling 50 milligram capsules. And their staff is so undertrained that they think it is an acceptable dose for a new patient. And so I can't tell you how important this is, because I've sat in front of those patients and their families crying in front of me because, you know, I told them the proper way to use it, but they were assured by this person at a dispensary that this was okay to take. And so they trusted that person. They went home and they took a 50 milligram capsule and had terrible experience with it. And it's really traumatic for at that point, because not only did that dispensary probably lose a customer, but also more importantly, way more importantly, is that I may have lost a patient there that could have gotten massive benefits from proper use. So the education expands so much further beyond just the physicians and the patients, but also to anybody that handles the medicine or that is involved in the treatment of the medicine. And that goes back to our number one problem that you asked first, is this education on how to use this product properly and to be able to get the best results. And lastly, to wrap up that question, so how do I target specific treatment when we talk about strains and dispensaries and things like that? Well, it's really important to go to a good physician here, because it has so much to do with the whole picture, the whole patient. It's not just about the disease. It's about who this patient is, what their experiences are. Are they a nervous person? Are they somebody that gets worried all the time? Are they somebody that has trauma in the past? Are they, you know, is there, there's so much to the patient than just a diagnosis on a piece of paper. And all of that needs to be known and understood by the physician, because all of that matters when it comes to which cannabis might be right for them. And by understanding that kind of whole picture, you know, whole body, mind, body, and spirit of the patient, you then can get into, okay, knowing specific strains of marijuana or specific ratios of CBD to THC that then this patient would best utilize. So every patient that I see, they leave with a pretty comprehensive understanding of the differences in this medicine. But more importantly, they leave with very specific products, names of products from specific dispensaries that I know carries them. And that's their starting point. I make sure that every patient that leaves my office has a starting point. They know what they're going to get, and they know the dose they're going to try, and they know what they're going to do for at least the first month. But the important thing here too with our physicians to understand is this, is that everybody is different. And this plant works different, a little bit differently in everybody. So much of this has to do with preference, where the patient needs to be allowed that freedom. After that first month or two of really kind of strict guidance, then they need to be allowed that freedom to try different strains, try different dispensaries, and really find the product or that medicine that's perfect for them. And it's one area of medicine where you don't find this anywhere else. You can't go and say, oh, I need to find the right cholesterol medicine that matches my personality. you know, it's just like that doesn't exist. But in cannabis, it does. And so it's something that's really new to our healthcare. And it's really new. It's something that we've been striving for so long, to have personalized medicine. And it is something that nature has made for us over thousands of years, because, you know, in just the United States alone, there's over 2,500 different strains of cannabis. It's a daunting number. How the heck do you know what to use? So you need, this is really where a physician's guidance, a well-educated physician can really guide the patient to know not only what's available in their state, because in Florida, we don't have 2,500 different strains. We maybe have 30.
Right.
So knowing those 30 different strains, knowing everything inside and out about them, then knowing your patient, knowing their disease process, the pathology of the disease, and then making that connection between the two and educating the patient and how to do it the most safe, the most comfortable, and how to eventually get them to their goal. And you know, it's by doing it that way, I've been extremely successful. I think my number one patient right now for medication, how many, she came off of 26 medications.
Wow.
Young patient in her 30s with some debilitating conditions.
Wow.
26 medications every single day. Now she's down to just one, and that's medical cannabis.
Incredible.
So on
that's
average,
incredible.
Yeah, it is. It's on average, I put out a survey to all my patients. I had about 5,000 responses over the past year. And on average, my average patients come off of 5 to 6 medications. But about 5 to 10% of those patients have come off of 10 to 20 medications. So we're talking really life changing things here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, because all those medications come with their own side effects. I used to work in the pharmacy and it was like scary how many medications people would be taking.
Got bags from
the we would call them the big brown bag because they would have like 30. Like,
yeah,
can you imagine taking 30
medications? Yeah. Half of those medications are just to treat the symptoms of the other half of medications.
Exactly. Oh. Of course,
just
because
insanity.
Then you have stomach issues, you need to pill for that. Right.
Yeah. And of course, this adds to the huge healthcare burden. I used to be a medical device representative, and you know, the amount of waste that you see, you know, in the hospital, in the operating room. And I mean, these things, it's just crazy. And the same goes for the pharmaceuticals, which is probably, who knows, maybe the worst. But I want to just reiterate for our listeners, because some of the things you said, obviously a lot of the things you said were unbelievable, but I want people to know, like, to think about this, the therapeutic window for cannabis. Like, we talk about therapeutic windows for different drugs and different vitamins. And, you know, some have small windows because, you know, it takes a certain amount to give you the effect. But then if you do too much, you get bad effects. So the first one was that it's humongous. And, you know, we'll say it, you don't have to say it, but it's pretty much endless as from what we understand, as far as like how much you can take without hurting yourself. And then, of course, the second one, that entourage effect, where, you know, I think about that because I have a friend who, you know, CBD is hot now. So people are sending, CBD companies are sending bottles of CBD to people who are social media influencers. And I have a friend.
To
who,
us.
Yeah, to us all the time. Yeah. And I have a friend who's had two different companies send CBD to him. And he's like, you know, I don't feel anything. I don't feel all these effects. And so, you know, you're maybe missing out. Maybe even you have a certain condition that the CBD could help, but you have all these other ones that you don't even know can be improved, and you're limiting the chances of that happening when you have so few strain or, you know, so few cannabinoids. And then the last one, just to reiterate the last one, because we see a lot of, you know, I've been at Surterra and I see who goes in, and we see a lot of people that are older. And you know, it's important for people to know that vapor, from what we understand, you said vapor is safe. Am I off on any of those?
No, you're right on both. Just to add a little bit. So hemp-based CBD can be really good, especially as a preventative. But when it's really neat, when it's to treat something, when you're really looking for that therapeutic benefit, it is going to be much better. Yeah. To get all of those different, cannabinoids and into the system, to have them all work together. And then the second part, you know, there are some studies that show that extremely high doses of THC can, in fact, so for instance, like, it's really used well for pain, but actually too high of a dose can actually intensify pain. And
wow, okay.
There's new studies coming out that have a lot to do with ratios. In fact, and one of the newest studies I just read about talks about the ideal ratio of CBD to THC, and where at certain doses, like a 2-to-1 ratio, meaning two parts CBD to one part THC, that CBD actually can intensify the THC's effect. Whereas,
We heard someone say that once and we were confused by that. So it's cool to see that in the literature.
Yeah. So it's just the way it works in the body that they fight for the same receptors. And so at one point, it will actually maximize THC's effect. But with higher CBD use, it then takes away the psychoactive effect of it. So like say a 5-to-1 or a 10-to-1 ratio, these are much more CBD products that do have THC in them, but that will not give you any psychoactive activity. So, there's more and more studies that need to be done to kind of fine tune the exact dosing, the exact ratios, and what's best for what. But all that is exciting. It's so exciting, and it's coming out, and we're knowing about it, and we're learning more about it, and it's working. It's working, which is just unreal.
Yeah. So awesome.
Yep. Yeah, and there's one more thing on the... I'm trying to think on... I was thinking about that, but I guess I lost my train of thought. But I wanted to talk about, delivery systems, because you talked about the dispensaries, and they offer tinctures, pills, patches, there's edibles, vapor, now there's flower. Yep. And I just remember what I was talking about. So with the THC, there are some genes, like some people that have, I think it's GKT or some SNP, like that basically when too much THC is consumed, it can lead to like what they call psychosis, but it's really like a paranoia. Those would be cool to see, right? The genetics, looking at different gene profiles.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of research in that area as well. And right now we know... for certain, there's about 9 different genes that we know of that can just affect or give a little bit of a different of effect when using THC products. One of those genes, as you mentioned, is a gene that can cause or make a patient more susceptible to those types of negative side effects. But the thing, it's one more area where we just need people to be better educated on it, because, and you'll see things like, a certain percentage of people get addicted to it. Well, it's simply, yes, as a matter, of just words on paper, yes, that may be true. But if you actually look at the science of it, it's less than 9% of people actually can become physically addicted to THC. But, and this is a big but, that gene that causes a physical dependence is not specific for cannabis. It's specific for dependencies of anything. That same patient is the same patient that's addicted to chocolate, a physical addiction to chocolate, a physical addiction to, so many other coffee. Things that aren't coffee. Exactly. And so it's not anything that's specific to cannabis. It's simply a genetic variant that, some people have that gives them a more, we talk about it as maybe an addictive personality, which in some cases just a personality, but in a lot of cases, that type of patient actually has a genetic predisposition to that type of drive towards that substance or that whatever it may be. So. Is it an addictive medicine? No. The answer is no, it's not overall. The other genetics involved too are, like the psychosis that we talked about. But then one area of research that we're really doing now is specifically not only the patient's genetics, but also the cannabis genetics. And then eventually what we're going to be seeing is that we're going to be able to do full genetic profiling of patients and then be able to match them up with very specific strains of marijuana that match their genetic profile. So that's maybe 5 years, 10 years ahead, but it's already things we're working on now. So it's just incredible where we're going with this.
And, we've learned from our friend, Dr. Anthony Jay, about, smoking, and it may cause it to act more estrogenically, because obviously it does contain phytoestrogen. And that's just kind of one example why we personally, maybe you can help us educate us on this, like may not be the best option, but in your opinion, are some delivery systems better than others for different conditions, or is that just personal preference? I know you spoke about the vaporizing for their lungs.
Yeah, yes and no. So again, this comes down to why I love it that it's a medical and you know, I'm not against recreational. I think everybody should have the freedom to use a harmless thing. It really is harmless.
Yep, right. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm with you.
And so I think that's a personal choice, but I'm happy it's medical because this is the type of conversation that needs to be had with a educated physician. Because for instance, not knowing that CBD has a much more effective route as inhaled has thousands of patients failing CBD treatment. THC. So whereas CBD is not digested very well in the liver, it's destroyed, THC is actually changed into a more potent, stronger product by the liver. So not to get too much into the science, but when we talk about inhaled THC, we're talking about delta-9 THC. But when delta-9 THC is ingested orally, it gets to the liver and the liver changes it into a totally different form, into 11-hydroxy, and actually about 7 other forms. But 11-hydroxy is the most understood. So 11-hydroxy binds longer and much more potently. What does this mean? It means that inhaled THC will last you 3 hours, maybe 3 to 4 hours, whereas oral THC will last up to 8 hours. So different route and very different outcome.
Right.
Inhaled THC, people will cough while using THC. It doesn't mean that it's bad for you. It means that it's simply because what THC does in and of itself causes a little bit of what's called a bronchospasm. And so no matter what route it's used, if it hits the lungs or the bronchioles, it will cause a little spasm that causes a cough. This is completely different than coughing from smoking a cigarette. You're coughing from a cigarette because of the toxins. But here, so, and that's why, you know, you get a person that's been smoking cigarettes for, you know, 20 years, they're not coughing every time they smoke a cigarette.
Right.
You have somebody that's smoking marijuana for the past 40 years, they're still coughing. Why? Well, it's because simply the THC causes a little bit of a bronchospasm. But that's
interesting.
No, because maybe my 80-year-old patient doesn't want to cough. or maybe my lung disease patients don't want to be coughing any more than they already are. So it absolutely matters to direct some of these patients in how to utilize the best route for them. You know, the topicals and creams, they're a great product, but we're not there yet when it comes to development of these products because we have to see kind of more of the lab data to show how well it's absorbed and utilized in the blood and throughout the system and things like that. But anecdotally, I've had thousands of patients that do very, very well with the, like Surterra, for instance, has their transdermal patches. They're a 12-hour patch. It releases 20 milligrams over 10 hours. So you're getting a low dose. We call it micro dosing, about 2 milligrams per hour. That's typically below the threshold of being high. So these patients are not high, but they're still getting 10 hours of a therapeutic level of THC in their system. So knowing your patient, knowing what your patient wants and what, you know, if they have no desire in getting high at all, they do not want to get high, but they want to feel better. I'm utilizing CBD in an inhaled route throughout the day, and then maybe an oral route of THC taken about 30 minutes before bed. What this does is CBD doesn't get them high all day. They're not high at all during the day. And then since oral THC takes about an hour to kick in, they take it a half hour before bed. They're already in bed, eyes are shut, lights are off when it starts to ease them into sleep. So the majority of my patients never actually experience a high, even though they're utilizing medical cannabis around the clock. And so by understanding these routes and directing your patient to these routes really is where we're getting such great outcomes. I hope that answered your question.
Awesome. It totally did.
All right. So what have you seen to be the main roadblocks in counseling your patients? And then even with the process of obtaining a medical cannabis license or medical cannabis where you practice?
So number one roadblock is the state. The state of Florida has done nothing but present to us physicians and patients nothing but hardships and roadblocks to being able to get this medicine. So it is extremely tasking on physicians and on their staff to just do this basic recommendation. And then with the new edible, the added smokable route has just complicated and complexed the problem even more. So the state, hands down, has been the number one roadblock to treating patients. Wow. Number two, and it's a close number two, is just needing more education. We need the education to be out there. We need patients to be educated. We need our healthcare professionals to be educated. And we need the general public to be educated. You know, simple things like stop wasting your money on over-the-counter CBD if you're trying to treat a chronic disease. You know, things like that. So the education on it needs to be done. One of the beautiful things that I have witnessed in the last 3 years, though, is that the medical community in my surrounding areas, in the Tampa Bay areas, you know, I used to have patients come in whose primary care physicians or specialists were completely against this, wanted nothing to do with it. And some physicians were even kicking their patients out of their practice if they utilize this as a form of medicine. Now those same physicians are actually calling me, they're referring patients to me, they want to know more. And so the tide is turning substantially. And so that's really incredible to see. So that, I think the biggest roadblock is right now is the state. And with that, the federal government, you know, a lot of these research, you know, everything right now is in case studies because we're not allowed to do the research that we need to be doing. And so when the argument comes, well, we need more research, well, then let us do the research. You know, stop giving grants to only those massive university centers that can afford it. And maybe the people that have had their boots on the ground for 5, 10, 20 years already doing this medically. So, you know, that the federal government is a huge roadblock as well, but then just the education to just our general medical community is something that's changing, but still presents a huge roadblock. Yep.
Totally makes sense. And so we there's been so much knowledge dropped on this podcast. We're so grateful, but we want to be respectful of your time. So where can people find out more about you, your practice, and even any great resources on medical cannabis for research for, like, you know, a lot of us, you're seeing a lot of the citizen scientists or the citizen, you know, who's looking into stuff on their own. It's a beautiful thing because there's so much better access to information.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I warn any of my patients or anybody, be careful what you Google. And be careful what research you read. You know, one of the biggest things in medical school that you learn is how to dissect and just completely tear apart research papers.
A lot of people don't know statistics.
Yeah. Anybody can write a research paper and publish a research paper. Some journals are not even edited or criticized at all. They're not peer reviewed and they can just be published. And then guess what? They show up on PubMed. So finding out more information is important, but making sure it's the right information. So different resources. PubMed is a really good one for scientific data. But again, you can kind of find anything you're looking for on there, any side of the argument. So be careful on that.
Yeah.
But there's a really good website. I have no affiliation with them whatsoever, but they're a retail hemp-based CBD company, but they put together a great website. It's called CBDdistillery.org. And they have a science section that they have actually given every single, not every single, but they've given probably about 50 to 60 different diagnoses with links directly to PubMed articles of how cannabis can be utilized for that specific disease. So that is one of my go-tos for real science information there. And then honestly, in Florida, definitely in Florida, there are constantly, every other month, we have conferences, we have physician, we have dinners that we put on. There are many educational seminars being put on all over the place. I know Certera has sponsored many, many, many educational expos and dinners and talks on this to continue helping patients and physicians alike to learn more. So going to, seeking out and going to a physician that's been doing this for a while that understands this as a medicine, that and is really doing this as one of their primary practices right now, because it's really hard to integrate this into a already full running medical practice and be able to really know this medicine well. You really have to have that experience as a physician. So sometimes it's not the best idea to go to the cheapest place. Because you'll get a card, but you'll get no education. Again, there are other places that charge an exorbitant amount. So do your research on which physicians you're going to. I work for a company called DocMJ. We have over 30 different physicians in about 27 different locations throughout Florida. So accessibility is there. There are physicians in everybody's town, wherever you are, that are educated on this, that can really help you go through this process. I'm always available. I'm available online. A lot of people reach out to me online, on Facebook and social media. So I'm always happy to help whoever I can through those means. But yeah, don't just jump into it. Definitely do some research on not only the medicine, but also on who you're going to see and trust. And that also pertains to dispensaries. Not all dispensaries are the same. Many dispensaries are out there just to make money, and they cut corners right. with their products. And even though they're quality products, they may not be the best medicine for that patient. For instance, that one dispensary that on multiple occasions gave way too much of a dose to my patients. That's a dispensary.
I'm sure we know which one it is.
I won't say any names, but yeah. So, places like Certera are not like that. Places like Certera, Certera is my number one dispensary that I send my patients to. And there's a few others too. AltMed Florida stands out amongst the other ones as really patient driven dispensaries that are treating their medicines correctly. They're putting out good medicines that are consistent. They're the same every time. So if you find one that works, it's always going to work. Some dispensaries change their formulations without you knowing. And so you may get the same product name, but it may have a totally different effect. And that's because some dispensaries are simply cooking up stuff in their lab and then selling it as a strain that they made in their lab, but didn't actually grow in their grows. So, I definitely put my stamp of approval on a few of these and tell my patients to stay away from others. So that's important to know too. So absolutely.
Well, we can't thank you enough. It's been, we just enjoyed every minute of this. We cannot wait for people to hear this one. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys. I really appreciate your time.